Good morning.
Good morning.
So, this morning, I'm going to talk about old age, sickness, and death. and the coronavirus. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about our relationship to the coronavirus and how we might understand Buddhist teachings in regard to how we relate to this issue. And last Saturday at Jokoji, I talked about this some from the perspective of ways that we suffer and ways that we can cultivate a willingness to sit in the middle of that suffering. So if you're interested in that lecture, it's on the website. And I talked about how Suzuki Roshi said it was important to be willing to be patient with and not disturbed by our difficulties. Today I wanted to talk about kind of practical things to start out in that with that way to protect ourselves. So, you know, I think actually the things that we're being asked to do are kind of difficult. We can't see the virus. I was talking to Jocko. I said, what if it were like we actually see it? You know, like walking there, there's a little something all over the table, you know, glowing pink or something, you know, on surfaces. But we can't see it. By and large, we're not seeing any sick people either. We're just hearing about it on the news. So in some ways, this is very mysterious and opaque. Even though we understand the science of it, it still seems to be kind of far away. So I think for this reason, it's not quite real to us. And that this is actually happening. And probably the chances are good that some of us will actually get the coronavirus and that it's probably in Santa Cruz County already. So the other thing is that there are people who are asymptomatic, who are contagious. So here's the things we're being asked to do, and I'm sure you all have heard this. And I put up a sign out in the hallway. The number one thing is to wash our hands. That seems to be like the best thing you can do. Jocko and I were just at a conference in L.A., and I think I washed my hands before I went to the bathroom in the airport. I washed my hands when I came out of the stall, went to the bathroom. It's like just like washed my hands a lot and kept trying to keep my hands away from my face, which is so hard to do. We're being said we shouldn't shake hands. We shouldn't hug each other, which I think is hard. And cover our coughs and sneezes. So I noticed today during the Zendo, there were some sneezes and coughs. And even though, you know, a lot of times we just cough because we're just need to cough. You know, it's not about we're not sick or anything. But I think as a kind of practice for the other people, we might, you know, carry a handkerchief and put it over our mouth or cough into our sleeve like this so that the people around us, especially since here we are in the Zendo, we're sitting really about 8 inches apart from each other. So just for other folks' peace of mind, you might think about doing that. Again, not touching our face, mouth, etc. And then using a hand sanitizer. So I spent about 4 hours, I think it was on Thursday, running around town. First I ran around looking for hand sanitizer, which of course doesn't exist. So then I looked up how to make hand sanitizer. So then I spent another few hours collecting what I felt like the last, you know, of the ingredients in the area. So we have a hand sanitizer out there. And please use it. Okay, so you know, we need to do all of this that we can do to stay healthy. We need to stay home when we're sick. So if you're one of those folks who, you know, drag yourself to work or drag yourself to whatever it is, you know, feeling terrible and sick, but you go anyway. I bet there are some of those people in this room. I live with one of them. So you may not feel like, you know, you're contagious, but you know, really, the reality is that we don't know. And the other thing about it is there are people who, you know, have weak immune systems, and we don't know that about them, you know. So it's a bodhisattva act, you know, not to engage, not to kind of poo-poo this, but to actually take care of the people around you by being willing to do these things. So it's not just about us. It's also about the people around us. Okay, so because it's invisible, because some people are asymptomatic, and also I keep saying to myself, don't assume that I don't have it. Just because I don't feel this doesn't mean that I'm not asymptomatic, you know. So that's also another thing, that it's not always just about the other person. So I don't think we should get freaked out about this, but I think we should take it seriously. So that's my kind of practical advice before I launch into a Buddhist practice around old age, sickness, and death. So I think we should take this opportunity to consider our mortality, to consider impermanence, and our fragility as beings in bodies in the form realm. So if we become ill, not just the coronavirus, but any kind of illness, it's the result of causes and conditions. It's the result of being in a body. And it's the result of circumstance. It's not a result of some kind of failure of character. And it's not a punishment that we've gotten sick. So in Buddhism, when we talk about old age, sickness, and death, we say, why not me? Sometimes people say, why did this happen to me? And we say, well, why wouldn't this happen to me? Why wouldn't I have this experience? We say about death that it is inevitable. And we say about old age, gee, I'm lucky to have reached, to have lived this long in order to practice the Buddha's way. So this gift that we're being given of this long life to be able to work with and figure out how to be more skillful, how to be more helpful, how to become wiser, how to express our compassion. So this is a gift, you know, this gift of life. So in the Pali Canon, yesterday I went through the Pali Canon, which is the texts of the earliest teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, and read what he had to say about illness. And there are many examples of the Buddha going and visiting his disciples, and he's talking to them about death, and he says he almost always in every situation reminds them about impermanence and about our conditioned nature, so that we are impermanent. He often said, which I thought was interesting, but also very difficult to do, he would say, well, how are you feeling now? And the person would say, oh, boy, I feel terrible, you know, in this kind of stilted language. Oh, I feel really bad. And he says, well, is that a permanent condition? And they would say, well, no, Buddha, because of course we know the answer is no. It could not possibly be a permanent condition. And then he'd kind of say something, you know, akin to, well, get over it. So I thought that was, you know, pretty hard, actually. A kind of hard thing to say, but also hard to do. So I'm not going to say that to any of us, to myself or to you, that we should just get over it. But I think that it is important to, you know, really understand that nothing is permanent, that we are not permanent. We function in the world as if we think we're going to live forever. You know, we think about things as if they're permanent. We assume that our opinions are permanent. You know, we assume that if we're right about something, it's right in every situation. You know, that we kind of have these very black and white views about things. And to remember that things are conditioned, which means that everything is subject to these interconnecting causal conditions that are all interlocking, kind of like a very, 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 very complicated set of dominoes being knocked over in a gym. You know, so this way in which nothing is permanent, nothing is separate, nothing is disconnected from reality itself or from each other. So if we can work with that, if we can understand that that's the nature of our experience, then what will happen is that we can accept that. I think we have to, that's kind of like a basic ground rule, that we have to accept the fact that things are impermanent. This acceptance and willingness to look at things as being causally produced, as impermanent, not separate, is actually the way that we cultivate compassion. It's the way that we cultivate patience. It's the cultivation of wisdom. It's essentially the genesis and the ground of almost all of the skillfulness and the way that we alleviate our suffering as human beings. So if we can remind ourselves of this and cultivate equanimity around this, then we can shift our relationship to suffering. We can shift our relationship to our discomfort, which I think was the point of the Buddha saying to his disciples, get over it. So in a little gentler way, we would remind ourselves that it is our own minds that are creating this kind of model of permanence. It is our own minds that wants to deny the fact we are in causal relationships. So that we actually say to ourselves, okay, I'm going to sit down, I'm actually going to look at this. I'm actually going to look at my experiences and I'm going to say, you know, is this permanent? Is this disconnected from all of reality? You know, I think that the looking at how we're being asked to respond to what's happening with the coronavirus is really about coming in and saying, yes, everything is interconnected with everything else. Yeah, the things that I do as an individual actually have some impact on the totality of how the outcome of this. You know, I am not disconnected from the rest of reality. I'm not disconnected from the rest of the world. I'm not disconnected from the causal conditions that are creating this situation. It's being causally, you know, passed from one person, or, you know, how originally started supposedly from bats, getting the coronavirus from bats. So it's kind of like a whole domino effect of things that are going on. We can't see it in some ways. We can't see and know what that is. So there's this way in which we're being asked to have faith that the things that we're doing make a difference. And isn't that a lot of what our practice is? Isn't that a lot of the things that we do when we try to be skillful? We don't know. We don't know sometimes if what we're doing is actually going to be helpful. And yet we have faith that if we have empathy, which is just another way of talking about interconnection, empathy is saying, oh, in this relationship, I recognize that we are all in these causal interconnected relationships with each other. And that I know what it is to be a human being. I know what it is to be a being in the form realm. And that out of that comes my empathy and compassion. You know the word compassion is comes with passion. So with passion, with this empathy, with this acknowledgement that we're all in this together. So this is a Dharma gate. These are Dharma gates. These are a way that we can enter into this practice. So the Buddha said, abandon your delusion about these matters and really investigate the nature of this. We want to examine our expectations. We want to look at your resistances to doing this. You know, our resistances, in this case, doing these kinds of activities that we're being asked to do, washing our hands, using hand sanitizer, not touching our face. You know, last night I was at home and I thought, well, I washed my hands, so now I'm at home, I can touch my face. You know, so as long as I'm at home, I can touch my face. And then I thought, yeah, but if you do that at home, maybe you'll forget while you're out. So maybe you should practice not touching your face while you're at home watching TV. So You know, what is our resistance? It's so much nicer to be able to touch your face. So, looking at our denial, you know, what's our denial around all of this? I mean, we don't really want this, do we? Do we really want this? Do we want to turn on the TV and see the stock market? It's like going, you know, like this. Because what does that represent? Even if you don't have money in the stock market, it represents businesses not functioning the way they normally function. It represents a major disruption, potentially a major disruption in our lives. So this way that I think as human beings, we have the most amazing ability to rationalize and deny. And I'm sure that it has some function for us, but that we engage in this, it's amazing to me how myself included, how we all engage in this kind of feeling. Are we angry? Do we feel victimized by this? Looking at our reluctance to let go of our likes and dislikes, what we want to do versus what we're being asked not to do, all of those kinds of things, and to just really kind of look at that and sit in the middle of that and be uncomfortable with that. You know, we live in a culture that worships health, youth. It disdains those who don't fit that stereotype. We have slogans like, 50 is the new 30. That may not be the right one. You know, this notion that if we're 50 years old, we should actually look and act like we're 30 years old. I think it was 30 is the new 5. So the message is that if we get old or we get sick, even if we die, somehow it's a failure on our part. So of course we know this is not true. In Buddhism, death is a natural thing. Old age is a natural thing. Sickness is a natural thing. Death is actually an act of generosity. If every one of us lived forever, can you imagine if every animal, every insect, every plant, every person, everything lived forever? It would be a very crowded planet. So this whole relationship, you know, this interconnecting relationship, the generosity of a willingness to step off the stage, you know, to realize that we have this totality, this mandala of this process of birth and death is important. So in the morning service, we chant two distinctly different approaches to our teaching. One is the Heart Sutra, and the other is the Universal Gateway, which is chapter 25 of the Lotus Sutra. Both of these texts are tied together by the Bodhisattva of Compassion, Avalokiteshvara, who's also known as Kuan Yin, Canon, Chenrezig. In both these ways, Avalokiteshvara is known as either the regarder of the cries of the world or the one who looks down and witnesses and empathizes with the difficulties of this world, this Saha world. In the Heart Sutra, it is Avalokiteshvara who clearly sees, it's a quote, who clearly sees that all five aggregates are empty of inherent existence, and thus knowing that relieves all suffering. And in the Universal Gateway, Avalokiteshvara can greatly relieve the suffering of birth, old age, sickness, and death through our faith in Avalokiteshvara's vow to regard the cries of the world and bring compassion to suffering. So the Heart Sutra reminds us that we are not permanent, we are not separate. We are told there is neither old age and death, nor extinction of old age and death, no suffering, no cause, no cessation, no path, no knowledge, and no attainment. With nothing to attain, a bodhisattva relies on prajnaparamita And thus the mind is without hindrance, and without hindrance there is no fear. We are not hindered by our resistance to impermanence. We are not hindered by our resistance to this vast interconnection. We are not hindered by, we are not frightened by this cycle of old age, sickness, and death. We are willing to let go of our attachment to this self that is impermanent, this self that is in this interconnected process of birth and death. Dogen says, birth and death itself is nirvana. When we understand this, we are actually in nirvana. It is not somewhere else. It is in the context of this, of your birth and death. So, this is the logic of our Buddhist teaching. And this is what we should be asking ourselves about, and this is what we should be observing. We're asked to drop our attachment to our life as separate from all other life. Not in the way of throwing your life away, but in this way of realizing that we are in community with the whole world. We are in community. That this community is more real than this way in which thinking about ourselves as just separate entities. You know, we're like built to think that way because we think of ourselves in a way as like we're like a little homunculus up in our head, you know, like I'm looking out, subject, object, right? Looking out all the time. And I can't see my face. You can't see your face. You know, we can see our hands and all that, but essentially, we are so dependent upon our senses bringing in certain pieces of information that it's not surprising that we think of ourselves as being this autonomous being in which the world, we are in the center of a circle of which we are the center, right? It makes total sense that we perceive the world that way because physically we're set up that way. So we're being asked to perceive the world not from the center, but actually to also realize at the same time simultaneously, we're all one thing, right? You know, that we're all together, that we are not separate. So, we work on not being disturbed or unbalanced by these difficulties. We will die, we will get sick. If we're lucky, we will reach old age with all of our marbles. You know, we will be able to work on our practice. We will be able to find ways to mature. We will be able to have our wisdom, our own wisdom. Each one of us has our wisdom that we can bring to each other. And that comes through the difficulties and suffering and actually being able to look at those things with a kind of kind-hearted, open, wise response to our own lives and our own difficulties. So we have something like the Heart Sutra, which is, if you come here and you read it, you know the Heart Sutra can be a little intellectual, but this way that we actually make it heart, right? Heart. This impermanence, this interconnection of all of life, and also the universal gateway, which grounds us through faith and compassion. Faith, not faith and compassion, which it could be, but I'm saying faith in compassion, this way that we have faith in the empathy and wise compassion that we can give each other when times are difficult, and for all of us that varies. So this way that we are open to each other in this way. And so we say we are Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. We are Avalokiteshvara. We are this teaching. We are this community. So let's manifest that in our life and take this opportunity with the coronavirus to investigate our denial, to investigate our fear, to investigate our understanding of community, to investigate what it is to support each other by doing these things like washing our hands and not touching our face and all of this other stuff. So this way that we take all this seriously and practice with each other in this way. And that we rely upon the teachings to ease our fear, awaken our souls, bring faith to us, happiness to us, uplift our spirits. Thank you very much.